This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Jay Waters and Joe Thwaites. They are both composers for the game Sackboy, A Big Adventure. And Jay is also the audio director at Sumo Digital and was recently nominated. The game was nominated for a DICE Award for Outstanding Audio Design. So first of all, congratulations, Jay, on the award. And both of you, it's just so fun to have a chance to talk.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you guys too, virtually over Zoom, like we do everything these days. Well, I guess my first question would be, was it as much fun working on this game as it is to play? Because I have just been having a blast getting through all of these worlds that Sackboy gets to go through.
I'm going to have to say yes. Obviously, you've played the game. There's a lot of variety in there, and there is a lot of fun. There's a lot of humour. It's always been a big part of the franchise, is an element of joy, and I'm glad you can see it shining through, because the team really enjoyed the time on that game.
Joe, what about you? What was the thing that you really enjoyed about working on this particular game?
Oh, there's so much stuff. I mean, it's such a great fun game. As you know, there's so many different styles of music, and it's a real treasure trove of different tracks and stuff that we got to play around with, and different styles and genres. So it was great fun just kind of getting our teeth. I mean, we did a lot of the implementation our side in-house, and one of the things I enjoyed a lot was kind of getting the bigger name tracks and playing around with them, and getting all the stems for them and being able to implement them in cool and interesting ways.
Well, what were some of the early ideas that you had, Jay, maybe as audio director, for how this game would sound different from the earlier Little Big Planet titles?
I guess probably scope and variety were the two areas we were looking at. You know, we're all real big fans of the previous games, and there's a certain kind of aesthetic charm to their soundtracks. So we obviously wanted to retain that, but we also wanted to look at kind of what other directions we could explore. So obviously we kind of tried to cover as much territory there as possible. You know, we wanted to look exploring bigger artists, more mainstream acts, and also maybe looking at where we could also even go more left field, just ultimately to give a much more diverse soundtrack, really. And I guess scale as well. There are quite an unprecedented number of tracks for the franchise, and it was a lot of fun putting that together.
I bet. What were some of the early conversations that you had with the composers and Joe in particular? Because you guys collaborated on, I guess kind of the main theme. And so what were some of those early thoughts about what the music should sound like?
Well, I guess the main theme was probably a good starting point. It was early on when we first started working with Joe and the guys down at CSG. It was pretty clear from early on that this game really needed a signature tune, because we've not really done that before. So then we kind of just got together in Joe's studio down in London and started to plan out what that would be.
When we were first kind of playing around with different ideas and what we actually wanted to put into the game, one of the things that kept on coming up was, yes, we're going to need something that ties all these different bits and pieces together. The kind of heritage of the franchise meant that we definitely wanted to get an eclectic mix of different composers and artists involved in the project. But we definitely also wanted to have a kind of a narrative that went through the whole game, and we wanted to tie that up in something that was kind of ours and was Sackboy. So we came together and thought we'd put a theme together that we'd be able to share out amongst the various composers that we'd be using in the game, and they'd be able to take that theme and incorporate it into their tracks, and that would kind of bring the whole world together.
Well, what was your collaboration like? I'm really curious about collaborations and, you know, who gets like the final say or how you guys share ideas and that kind of thing.
I can't remember where we started, Joe, was it? I think we started by throwing ideas over the fence, didn't we? And then, yeah, and then kind of picked them up down in London. And yeah, I don't know, really. It was a new experience for me, for one. But yeah, just basically taking some time with Joe and sitting down and working out a number of key melodies, really. As mentioned, it wasn't just the Sackboy theme or the Sackboy signature motif. We wanted a suite of themes that could represent different themes within the narrative. So yeah, it was a bit of jamming, a bit ad hoc, and then a bit of arrangement after that.
Yeah, it certainly made it easier that we needed kind of a mix of different sounds and styles, because they're going out. This track was going to be used by different composers who were composing in very different styles. We knew that we would need kind of lots of different bits of content that could be used in different ways. So that made it a lot easier at the start. So we'd both come up with ideas and kind of throw them back and forth between each other. And then slowly we kind of start carving them so that they'd kind of fit as a cohesive thing. But it also allowed... you have these separate little bits that worked in isolation, but also as a whole. Yeah, and as Jay says, it was kind of back and forwards for a little while, and then he came down to the studio quite a few times, and we'd kind of just sit there and hash out some harmonies until we were both happy with something.
So there was like no door slamming or, you know, storming off and off or anything like that.
No, there weren't much in terms of egos, was there really? But yeah, I mean, back at that stage, really, you know, it was just a rough collection of motifs when we reached the point that we could hand these out to the composers and say, you know, there was barely little more than a progression and a melody, and it was like, well, okay, over to you, you know, work these into your compositions if it suits. Basically, there was no real forced motive there or anything.
Yeah, it's worth saying, kind of a bit further down the line, that it kind of came together more as a theme than it did originally. So we had these kind of core melodies and ideas that we had that we'd share with the composers. And then towards the end, as it started to kind of come together, we actually then developed it into a theme. And it was a bit of a feedback loop. The composers would do their versions on the theme, and we'd take kind of some of the instrumentation, some of the stuff that they'd done, and refeed that back into the theme. So it kind of tied everything together.
Well, you lined up so many really, really interesting composers, and I've talked with a few of them, like Winifred Phillips and Lena Raine and Brian D'Oliveira, and their contributions are so amazing. And so at what point did you decide that you needed to create this big tent of really diverse composers?
It was always kind of in the plan that what we thought would be a good way of doing it is if we had a dedicated composer to kind of own each world, because they were very, very kind of diverse in their art themes. So what once we had a rough outline of what those art styles were across those worlds, then it was just a case of aligning composers that would fit with that style. And obviously we kind of wanted to bring forward a couple of composers from previous games that we worked with before. And so, yeah, it just turned out quite nice that both Winifred and Brian were really good fits for their respective worlds, really.
Thank you. Joe, did you have a lot of conversations with the other composers, or were you kind of just in your own little silo on the project?
No, the whole project was very collaborative, kind of ecosystem of everyone working together and chatting and communication between all of the various different composers. And it was great fun working with each of them and their own very specific styles. I mean, Brian did some absolutely mad stuff. I don't know if you heard his just can't get enough cover yet in a Peruvian style, but it's absolutely mad and great fun and perfect for the game.
I got a chance to visit his studio, and so I saw a lot of those incredible instruments in person, including the musical rocks that he sourced in some very, very obscure location in Mexico. And I think those are in his tracks too. And so, yeah, it's like an Aladdin's cave of all these really exotic things.
We went to him and we asked, we got this idea where we want to do covers in the game. And we want to do them in the styles that the world. So we gave him kind of a suggestion of a cover that he could do, which was Just Can't Get Enough. And he was like, can I do that in the style of touring South America and doing all the different styles of South America? We're like, absolutely, go wild with it. And he absolutely did go wild with it. And you can hear it's kind of his exploration of South America through Just Can't Get Enough.
It's amazing. It's like being there with all of those really incredible sounds from whistles and rocks and all of this other flutes and all kinds of stuff. Yeah,
I think interestingly, one of the key things we wanted from the covers is that we didn't want the players to really get those covers straight away. You know, we wanted a minute or two to of game time before it finally clicked what that was. And I think if anything, Brian's Depeche Mode cover is the one that takes the longest to register.
Yeah, it took me a minute to kind of remember, oh yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah, I think the realization, my favorite realization is with Winifred's cover, when people realize that that's Material Girl, and it doesn't take too long in that one to realize what it is, but people are often their reactions are pretty blown away when they go, oh, this is Material Girl, this is crazy.
How did you all solve the problem of using the licensed songs? Because, you know, everybody remembers what they sound like and, you know, they're kind of singing along and stuff. And yet they had to be able to loop for as long as it takes to get Sackboy to, you know, hop around in the level or fix, you know, solve the puzzle or whatever. So how did you guys deal with that?
Again, we've worked with very talented composers, luckily. You know, Winifred and Brian, they've done a lot of game music. They understand how to write for long kind of periods of time and being able to write it for that style. And then in the game itself, you know, the brief that we wrote for them would allow for them to be kind of split up into their component sections, but also to kind of go off in a little bits of different directions to allow them to kind of breathe a little bit so that you're not constantly getting that chorus over and over again and going mad. Yeah, and then the implementation in game does lots of different and fun, cool stuff that hopefully under the hood doesn't necessarily get noticed, but helps the music kind of just stay a little bit more interesting. For example, if you stop moving Sackboy and kind of idle for a bit, the drums will drop out of the track and it will drop down to kind of a lower percussion version of it and start moving again and it will kick back in. As you go into bonus rooms, the music moves from diegetic to non-diegetic. And yeah, various other bits and pieces where it's kind of just keeps the music alive a little bit in a different ways and keeps it interesting.
Yeah, I think one thing that we realised early on that we didn't really want to assign a particular section of the music to an area of the level, because obviously players are kind of free to hang around in that there and in those areas, and it can get quite repetitive. So we kind of broke it down into kind of mini arrangements per section of the level, so it always feels like there's a kind of a natural flow to the music, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And I know that's one of the challenges with writing game music, because you don't know what a player is going to do or how long it's going to take them to get through a particular area or deal with a boss or all of that stuff. So finding ways to kind of accommodate that is, I think, must be one of the really interesting challenges with, well, creating music that can be implemented and then deciding how to do that.
So. Yeah, some of the playtests for the game were very revealing in that front, that you would give a section that you would imagine would take most players, kind of in your head it would take 5 seconds to walk from A to B here, but some players will spend an hour there and you're just like, oh, I've only put a five bar loop there.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of speaking from experience, because there's a jump that I just can't make, and little Sackboy has to like run around and get back on the little platform and hop up there, and so yeah, I'm sure it takes some people, you know, a minute, but it's taken me a lot longer. So the whole reason for Sackboy to be going on his big adventure is because this evil villain Vex has kidnapped his friends, and they're forcing him to build this topsy-turver, this insane machine. And he's just like a textbook villain, you know, right out of Central Casting. But the way that his themes were created and his music were just amazing. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how Nick created the theme for Vex.
Yeah, so one of our biggest collaborators was Nick Foster, who did an absolutely amazing job on all the cinematic music and bringing kind of the final world as well to life. And he was the one who kind of really helped bring that thread of everything together, because he would be tying each of the different levels and worlds together with his cinematics, which would take you from kind of the underwater world to the space world, and he'd have to navigate that musically. And I think he did that, an amazing job of that.
What's so cool about the music that Nick wrote for Vex is it's like being in a funhouse, like the worst, scariest funhouse ever.
Well, so. I think when he first started out, it was in his it was a pitch, wasn't it, Joe? I mean, I think he'd basically had some concept art of Vex and he'd gone away, and then he came back a couple of days later and said, this is what I think Vex sounds like, and it was bang on the kind of that general kind of clown theme park House of Horrors type vibe. It just worked really well.
Yeah, but I mean, and this the other thing that I noticed is the size of Vex, you really get a sense of just how little Sackboy is too. I mean, the cutscenes help with that, but his music is just, Vex's music is kind of over the top too. It's like larger than life.
Yeah, that helped us a lot as well with the final world, because we had all our composers lined up for each of the different worlds, but we didn't have anyone for the final kind of Vex world. And then when Nick did his pitch for Vex and to doing the cutscenes with Sackboy and Vex, he was a perfect fit for doing that final world. And he's done some great pieces of music in there for the first Ghost Train track as well. I think it's a really great track.
Thank you. Jay, what were some of the ideas that you had about the sound for this game that either were different from the other franchises or the way you thought about the sound for this particular Sackboy adventure?
I think the main point there was for me was how the sound could actually work more seamlessly with the music. So kind of from early on, we were looking at systems whereby quite a few of the main critical sounds, a lot of the collectibles, a lot of the UI stuff could naturally play in tune with the music. So we built a system in the middleware to enable the sound designers to do that. So it was simply a case that whatever key that music is in, a given sound would play in that key, basically.
Because it's really interesting. It doesn't feel like, and it certainly doesn't sound like, the sounds in the game are fighting or competing at all with the music. It's just kind of this seamless wash of sound. Well done.
I think that's a big part of it, really, because traditionally with most games, a lot of those key sounds have a really strong tonal element to them. And 9 times out of 10, they're likely to fall out of key with the music. I think it's something that players tend to expect, but then when you rethink about how you can do it a bit more pleasantly, then it just help things settle in with the mix a lot more.
I think it was laid out quite early in the project that it was a music focused game, and so a lot of the sound designers would often try and work systems and work their sound around the music, and there's lots of cool stuff that they did to make it work really nicely. One of the nicest things that I like is when you get the x2 bubble, which kind of multiplier, it's got a countdown on it and it ticks to the tempo of the track that's playing, and it's just small touches like that which keeps everything in sync and everything in tune and everything moving and working as a cohesive whole, which makes it sound really great.
Yeah, I'm really curious about how you decide what sort of things in a game need to have a sound and what other ones necessarily don't need to make any sound at all, so that you don't like overload the level with too much audio.
Good question. I think realistically these days that there are very few things that don't really require a sound. 9 times out of 10 you'll get a bug back from QA if something's missing a sound, so we normally kind of obliged to complement everything. But I think going back to what you mentioned before, I think the real challenge is getting them to sit well together, and I mean a lot of that comes at the mix stage later on, but if you're bearing these things in mind, I think keeping things fairly subtle and minimal rather than kind of overloading each sound design into something that's you would expect to kind of overwhelm the player can also be a big help.
I'd love to know what the process is to determine what kind of a sound there should be, like for the bubbles or for the parts of the game where, Sackboy has to interact. And are you able to just sort of play around with something until you get exactly the right sound of him popping the little bubbles?
Yeah, there is a fair amount of iteration throughout. Certain key areas of the game have a certain particular direction we're looking for, but from a high level, because of the nature of the game, the overall crafted element, that was something that we wanted to ring through the sound throughout, really. So everything from crafted materials to children's toys to anything that could kind of evoke that overall image of a child at play and imagining everything around them, but using what's at their disposal to kind of create that scene. We were really keen to support that where we could in the audio, and that kind of informed a lot of the sound design choices.
Wow, that's an adorable image of a kid just running around in a playroom, and now I've got this picture of your studio kind of looking like that with toys and stuff.
Yeah, you wouldn't be wrong there. But then again, when you kind of you look at the ambiences in the levels. I mean, that like conceptually, those each world takes place in a real world environment. For example, the Amazon is set inside a garden center, but obviously the real world environment is not really very inspiring from an audio perspective. So, you know, we kind of very much focused on the fantastical element in there, which is the Amazon. So yeah, we were free to build that up as rich as we could, really.
Well, so like when you're out in the real world, like at a real life garden center, are you like constantly aware of sounds and things that you could like incorporate in a game?
I'm not sure personally I've done that in a garden center, but you know,
or wherever,
if,
you know,
if it was the Amazon, that would be a different thing.
Yeah. I really love Lena Raine's music for the map area where you can just go and chill, and it's a lot more relaxed than some of the, you know, the music when Sackboy is running around collecting bubbles and stuff. And so what kind of direction did she get from you guys, or decide on her own to make that a much more sort of a chill sound?
You've kind of just said it there, Kate, really. I mean, that was generally the opening suggestion, really, is that, yeah, this is the world map, so you're free from any threats, any challenge. There are no enemies, you know, for me, I really wanted it to be a place where you're kind of getting away from the intensity, and it's a bit, you know, it's a bit more relaxing. It's something you can kind of leave while you go and make a cup of tea without, you know, having to pause the music. And but yeah, it was, we wanted it to be really calm and serene. And the kind of the way we put it to Lena was to more think about kind of melodies and motifs floating in the wind, you know, rather than a full-on piece of music, just interweaving themes, really, that kind of will blend with the ambience.
Yeah, and she roped in a couple of really incredible musicians too: Kristen Nagus on flutes and Doug Perry on percussion. And just the way that those are all woven together is just it's nice, and it is kind of ethereal, and yeah, you can just chill out and hang out.
Yeah, and that was implemented in a really cool way as well, because each of the worlds has its own kind of layers that come in. So it's kind of the same bass track throughout each of the worlds, but as you go into the different, yeah, as you go into the Amazon, you get more Amazonian type instruments, and similar with space, you get more electronic stuff coming through. And she did a really good job of navigating that kind of space and bringing in different instruments where they were required. Thank you.
I'm curious about what the recording sessions were like, because COVID has, you know, really put a monkey wrench into a lot of production schedules and recording plans and that kind of thing. And so, Joe, did you have to rethink at all how you were going to record your music?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't without its challenges, I must confess. Luckily for us, the recording times kind of fell within a period of time where there was kind of opening of restrictions here in the UK to some extent. But we did have to take into account kind of social distancing and mask wearing and stuff in the studio, and we could only have a certain amount of players in the studio at any one time. Luckily for the kind of style that we were going for, it didn't require kind of a massive symphonic sound, and we wanted everything split up into its stems, so we were going to record everything separately anyway, so that wasn't too much of an issue. And there was a bit of a result in when we were recording the strings, because recording at Air Studios in the hall and kind of having them set out in that arrangement actually ended up being a really wide and beautiful sound that really worked with the style that we were going for. And yeah, it was a very different arrangement to anything that we'd certainly done. Even the mixing engineer, Jake Jackson, was kind of unfamiliar with trying to do before. But once we got the sound down, we were really pleased with it in the end.
Well, I would love to find out from both of you, what were some of the like really memorable parts of working on this project, and what were the things that like really stood out where you were like, you know, pinching yourself that I get to work on this. I don't know, Joe, do you want to go first?
Such a game of such different bits of fun. I don't know, it's hard to, you know, as we were saying, it's such an eclectic mix of different stuff, and I loved everything from getting the kind of super left field bizarre bands that our excellent music supervisor James Marshall would kind of scout out for us and go, guys, we found this really cool track by this really bizarre artist, and I think it's going to work perfectly for this level. And we'd listen to it as a group and kind of chat about it. And then kind of that process of then getting that in game and trying it out and feeling it and how it feels in the level, it's just, you know, and then getting your hands on the stems and being able to split them up and go, oh, actually, this is going to work really nicely. Because there's certainly some tracks where you would think it was going to work really nicely, but then you'd get it in game and you're like, oh, actually, this isn't working as well. We don't have all the stems that we require to actually do some of the cool stuff for the licensed tracks that we wanted. But yeah, on the other hand, sometimes you get a track and you have everything that you want to be like, oh, this is actually going to work perfectly. And that happened, you know, countless number of times. And it was great fun when it works out and you have that moment of getting a track in game and it working perfectly.
Wow. And Jay, what about you?
It's kind of similar to Joe, really. It's often when you try something and it kind of works to a surprising level, and it kind of really brings that level alive. after the fact upon release. Another real, a really big important factor is just seeing the reaction of the players. You know, when you're just reading comments online about, you know, how much they love the soundtrack and how, you know, what a particular track has really made that level into something special. I think that's when you've done something all right there.
Yeah, the fan reaction to the soundtrack is just amazing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just, like, I haven't seen any negative comments except maybe one that's like, I wish there was more. But apart from that,
I don't think we could possibly have done any more, could we, Joe?
Did you end up putting just about all of the music in the soundtrack?
Question. I think there's a few tracks that are missing out from the soundtrack, a few kind of smaller tracks that weren't really kind of wouldn't be suited for a kind of the linear medium of the soundtrack, but mostly, yeah, it's mostly in there.
Yeah, wow. Well, you guys both have set the bar so high for this little Big Planet franchise now and for Sackboy. And I can't wait to hear what you do next. And congratulations again on the DICE Award nomination. And it's been so much fun to meet you and talk with both of you. So thank you so much.
Oh, no, thank you. Thanks for having us on.